This is Scott Berguin of KSOWLP in Cottage Grove, Oregon, and we have on the line Medea Benjamin, co-founder of Code Pink and Global Exchange, and right now involved with Troops Home Fast in Washington, D.C. Hello, Medea.
Hello, Scott. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for joining me. I was actually thinking of you today before we made contact, hoping I could talk to you because I want to talk to you about the situation in the Middle East, but let's start, not start with that, let's start with just how you're doing. It's the 20th day of your fast, is that right?
That's right, it's day 20. I'm doing fine. I'm one of the fasters that is having juice, though, so that gives a little more energy. It is tough, though, to run around and be doing all these political actions and organizing and planning and be fasting at the same time, so it's certainly a challenge. But it brings you closer to the issues. It makes you think about it all the time because you're always cognizant of the fact that you're not eating. And, you know, it just feels like it's connecting the issues out there in the world, whether it's Lebanon now and Israel and Iraq, but all of the killing and all of the violence that seems so far away seems just a bit closer to home.
Right. So I didn't know that, actually. There are some people that are fasting just on water?
Yes, there are some people that are just doing water.
Oh, my gosh. Hats off to them.
Right. Boy, do I say that when I see how hard it is just to do the juice fast of doing just water, which I started out doing. And after the first couple of days, I just felt very weak and like I couldn't keep going on the water and be doing the political work as well.
Well, as I've
said, and all of the people who are doing the water only.
Right. Well, as I've said to others that I've talked to that are there in D.C. and elsewhere, it's not like you're all just sitting around wishing you could eat. You're keeping very busy and doing.
Are.
And in fact, I talked to you earlier. You were on your way back from New York.
Yes, just went there with a couple of other folks to organize a. An action in front of the U.S. mission to the U.N. This is related to Lebanon, and we were appalled by the fact that our ambassador to the United Nations, John Bolton, refused to go for a ceasefire and instead blocked the U.N. Security Council from calling for a ceasefire. And as your listeners probably know, this has been the policy of the Bush administration and Condoleezza Rice to say, well, you know, we'll just give the Israelis a little more time to bomb the hell out of Lebanon, and then when they've done that, then it might be time to talk about a ceasefire. So we organized a letter that we sent out to the groups that are part of United for Peace and Justice, and in 48 hours got over 300 groups to sign on, and then delivered that to the United Nations. The funny thing, Scott, is that the last time we tried to deliver a letter to the United Nations, our great diplomats there decided that instead of just receiving the letter, they would have us arrested, which they did. We have to go to trial in September. Me and Cindy Sheehan and other members of the group Military Family speak out for trying to literally deliver a letter.
The charge being for trying to deliver a letter? Or what could they possibly...
They fancied it up to say things like disorderly conduct and trespassing, and it was just ridiculous. But this time they got a little smarter, and instead of having us arrested, they still wouldn't let a group of us go up to the mission. And this is a mission that is paid for by us, the taxpayers. It is our mission to the UN. But they did come downstairs, and it was a little bit funny because it was pouring rain, so to see this... staff person from the U.S. mission to the U.N. have to come down in that pouring rain and talk to a group of protesters and receive our letter and engage us in conversation, we felt was a little bit of a step up from the last time and a small victory.
Well, these are very trying times, and I really would like to get your perspective on what is happening right now in the Middle East with Israel, Lebanon, the Palestinians, the Gaza Strip, I mean, whatever, what your thoughts are these days is this in this past couple, I guess, has it been a week or a couple weeks already?
It seems like a couple of weeks, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But it hasn't been. And you know, while we were in New York doing that, the Fasters who were in Washington were walking through the halls of the Senate and the House, giving a dressing down to the Congress people who voted to continue to allow Israel to carry out its massive attacks on Lebanon. And when you look at these trying times, as you say, Scott, it's not just the fact that what was a border skirmish, Hezbollah taking of two Israeli soldiers and could have been settled in a much more peaceful manner, was really a justification then for Israel to start this massive attack on Lebanon. But in terms of our responsibility as U.S. citizens, you know, we are paying for this because we give the Israelis their weapons, because we give them several billion dollars every year, because the U.S. gives protection to Israel at the Security Council constantly for these types of aggressive actions. And so when our Fasters in Washington saw that the Congress had unanimously in the Senate and then in the House by a vote of 410-8 supported Israel and acted as if these attacks were legitimate self-defense, we were really appalled by it. And it's another example of just how world public opinion is so different from the way things are put forth by the media in the United States. And so just like in the case of Iraq for so long, the American people are ignorant of, you know, what's really happening in the Middle East. And while this time they are seeing a lot of the scenes of destruction on their TV screens, I think they are seeing it in a perspective that says poor Israel was attacked and is just defending itself, rather than Hezbollah made a very stupid and aggressive move in capturing the two Israeli soldiers. But this kind of response is totally unjustified, and it is civilians who are really bearing the brunt of the attack. So to have our Congress people just ignore reality, have the media continue to give this very, very biased view of what's happening, is just only compounds the work that we have to do, Scott.
Well, what do you think? I mean, that vote in the House, 410-8, is so astoundingly out of kilter that it makes me wonder. In fact, every Oregon, from where I'm at, every Oregon congressperson voted on the 410 side, including some that are considered progressives. And
right.
I'm astounded, because I think that it shows to me a real lack of understanding or depth of analysis. But then I wonder, these are intelligent people, and it seems like there's something else going on.
Well, that's right. And it's about money, and it's about the strong lobby, both the Christian and the Jewish lobbies that are so incredibly powerful. And I think what it is you see when any Congress people stick their necks out on this issue just a little tiny bit, they get pounced on and they get attacked like swift boat attacked. So they're kind of saying, look, these resolutions, they don't mean all that much anyway. I'm not going to risk my political career over what is, in the end, a pretty symbolic resolution. I mean, look at Dennis Kucinich. He put forward a resolution that just calls for a ceasefire. Now, my goodness, I mean, they're not, it doesn't condemn one side or the other side. It literally just says, you know, we want to stop the bloodshed. There needs to be an immediate ceasefire. He couldn't get even 30 Congress people to support a resolution for a ceasefire. So, you know, we're in pretty bad straits when so many of these Congress people, they know better. And for them to refuse to call for a ceasefire, refuse to criticize the this overwhelming response by the Israelis, that's just pure trying to save their political skin and really not standing up for any kind of morality or justice.
Well, it kind of says a lot about the fix we're in here, doesn't it? I mean, we've got, you know, supposedly we are in Iraq to fight the terrorists there, so we don't have to fight them here. This sort of looks like the same tactic that Israel is taking. I mean, I should say so-called terrorists. The ultimate question, right? How do we get out of this? How do we get our Congress, our leadership in this country to change this direction? I mean, let alone just get out of Iraq, which seems almost simple now compared to when you start throwing in everything, all the other possibilities of where this may go.
Well, that's right, and there are very doomsday scenarios that can be easily put forth, and when you see people like Newt Gingrich talking about World War III and using it as a strategy for the Republicans to keep people in this state of fear so that they'll vote for Republicans in the upcoming elections, it's just mind-boggling.
Yes.
I mean, I think what we have to push is this just the mirror opposite, which is we want to live in a state of perpetual peace. We want to live in a world without fear. We want to live in a world where we are ruled by international law, where we strengthen international institutions, where we solve conflicts nonviolently. And it might sound like a naive pie in the sky, but this militaristic response doesn't work. I mean, it hasn't worked for Israel over all these years, and since the last time they invaded Lebanon. And we see the tremendous failure of this militarist stand in Iraq. So, you know, I think that while we started to gain the American public back on our side in terms of Iraq, of people feeling like this was a mistake and they want to figure out a way to get out of there, now we have to win people over around this issue of sanctioning aggression and win them over to the idea that a ceasefire is the only way to go, and that there has to be a strengthening of international institutions. I mean, it's interesting that Condoleezza Rice now, I think, will probably be supporting some kind of more robust, as she says, UN peacekeeping force, but it can't be one that is biased and says we're just going to stop Hezbollah from attacking the Israelis. It's got to work the other way around as well.
Right. Oh, well, it's huge. So let's bring it back down to the plans for troops home fast. And I know, as we said before, you all are very busy. And what do you have coming up here for the next, we're starting a new week, and the next, going into the 20s now in your fast days?
Well, we have a lot coming up. We got to take big, deep breaths because there is so much coming up this week. The big thing is that the Prime Minister of Iraq is making his first visit to the United States. He'll be getting here on Tuesday, and we feel that we have to be very present during his visit. So we are setting up a camp, an encampment outside of the Iraqi embassy. We're taking out an ad in the Iraq newspapers, an open letter to the Prime Minister asking for him to meet with us, telling him that we support the desire of the Iraqi people and the American people to have a timetable to withdraw U.S. troops, and that he should listen to the Iraqi people and not be swayed by George Bush. And the encampment that we're setting up, we're calling it Camp al-Maliki, which is his name. We're setting it up outside the Iraqi embassy starting tomorrow at 3 o'clock. And we will be sitting outside the embassy and in a park across the street waiting to be able to meet with the Prime Minister. And we'll also be in front of Congress when he addresses Congress on Wednesday. We'll be in front of the White House when he is meeting with George Bush on Tuesday. And then after the exhausting week that we'll have around his visit, guess who's coming to town? Tony Blair.
Oh.
Right. Friday. So we're starting to make plans for that as well.
Are you going to try to get Tony to meet with you?
Yeah, well, we're going to try to do something when Tony's here. So I know you're very far away in Oregon, but if anybody feels, oh, these poor fasters not eating and doing all of that, well, come on out and help us.
Right. Well, I know I was talking to some folks from the Military Family Speak Out, military family from the South that they just today arrived in D.C. for a thing called Operation House Call. So apparently there's some.
Right.
And they said they're going to come down and say hi to you.
Good. So. Well, we support them and they support us. And
right.
It's nice to have friends outside of Congress doing that kind of vigiling.
Okay, well, to go back to the Prime Minister, maybe briefly, it's my understanding that he put forth a peace plan, what he called a peace plan, that included a timeline of U.S. withdrawal and some other things. Some of them, the kind of the most important parts of which were, I guess, vetoed by the U.S. government. What do you know about that?
Well, yes. Originally, there was a 28-point peace plan that was put together with a lot of work by people in the Iraqi government, by members of insurgent groups, religious organizations, by a host of people who are really desperately trying to find some solution to the ongoing bloodshed. And this 28-point plan was about to be announced, except for the pressure that the U.S. government started to put on the Iraqi government. And in the end, the plan that was announced by the Prime Minister eliminated 4 points. The most important of those was a timeline for the withdrawal of U.S. troops. It also eliminated a call for amnesty for anybody who had not killed civilians, and it called for an end to the raids that the U.S. troops have been engaged in, no raids without a court order, and it called for compensation to victims of violence from all sides.
Hmm.
Those 4 points were eliminated, and then the reconciliation plan was basically dead in the water. Not only did the insurgent groups say no way, but even a number of members of the government said, you know, this is no peace plan anymore, this doesn't make sense. So we have been saying that a timeline for withdrawal is an absolute essential part of any peace plan, and that the Bush administration should not be scuttling the attempts by the Iraqis to come together and find a solution to their problems, but should be encouraging them to do that. And so while the Prime Minister is here, one of the major parts of our points that we hope to be making is that the Iraqis indeed do have a reconciliation plan that is a credible, viable one, and that the Prime Minister should not have watered it down, that he should be representing and promoting the plan as it was originally envisioned, because the one that he's promoting now is just not a real peace plan.
Right. Well, once again, countless times the reasons that are given for why, you know, the U.S. invaded Iraq and have changed over time, and now it certainly draws into question what we really want out of I use that word loosely, want out of this situation. It doesn't appear that, it has to question whether we really, the Bush administration really wants the conflict to end.
Well, that's right, and another indication is when both House and the Senate passed an amendment saying that we would not have permanent bases in Iraq, and one would think that a democratic process means that if the elected officials in Congress vote for something, that it should have some weight. That amendment was just removed by the Republican chair of the committee. And one then has to question, why is it that the U.S. government will not make any kind of commitment to not having permanent bases in Iraq? Well, you know, the obvious answer is they're building permanent bases and they want to keep those bases there. And then we get back to the issue that, you know, this is not about democracy in Iraq. This is about control of Iraq's resources.
All right.
I'm sorry.
Sorry. Oh, well, I was just going to say it's basically colonialism, isn't it?
Well, yes, it is, and it's all about oil, and it's all about the Iraqi economy. We're going to be seeing in the next 2 months debates in the Iraqi parliament about some of these economic laws that were passed when the U.S. had direct control of Iraq under Paul Bremer. And there you'll see a lot of pressure put to bear on the Iraqis so that they pass all of these kind of privatization laws so that U.S. companies, if indeed we can see an end to the fighting in a more stable situation, we'd be able to come in and gobble up a lot of the Iraqi resources.
Right. Well, I feel like I've taken more than enough of your time. I appreciate your answers on all these questions, especially the stuff about the Middle East, because you are one of the shining lights, as far as I'm concerned, of people that you can always read. Even you've written stuff about various issues that we can go to, those of us progressives, whatever, that are trying to stay away from corporate media to try to get a perspective, a much-needed perspective on issues. So I thank you, Medea, for doing that.
Well, thank you for the interview. And Scott, let me just say that I think you are one of the people across the country who has done the most to be trying to get the word out about the fast and be supportive of us. So we really thank you very much for that support.
Well, I appreciate that, believe me, and I will keep trying, and I know others will, and I'll let you know that it's a small thing, but I'm in the fifth day of my fast.
Oh, my goodness.
So we'll see if and I'm doing juice like you, so
you passed the hardest part.
Yes, I know. That's very true.
Easier.
Day one. It's a good thing I didn't interview anybody on my first day doing it.
Oh, that was tough.
Yes.
Day two I found really tough.
Yes. I had about about 1.5 days, and then something happened, and just a switch changed or something, and it's
wow.
been good since. So, yeah, we'll keep working.
Your solidarity then in many ways.
All right. So I will also, I'm going to name drop, I hope you meet these people, Linda and Phil Waste. I hope they come by and see you. They're military family, Speak Out, and they're folks that I interviewed a lot during the Bring the Troops Home tour.
Oh, and I know them from Camp Casey.
Oh, you do know them. Okay, well, great.
Yes.
Well, look for them.
We're seeing them.
Yes.
Terrific.
All right. Well, it's a very political and a very personal thing we're involved in here.
Terrific.
Thank you, Medea.
Okay.
Have a great day 21.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.